This is episode 6 of UFO Encounters. This week I'm reading from G.O. Turner's book, UFO Science, Secret New Physics, Vehicles and UAP. When I have guests on my podcast, I read their books to work out questions for the episodes. When reading these books, I always find such fascinating information that never makes it into the podcast, and here I get a chance to give you a peek into the book. And I've put a link to the book in the show notes. I did seek permission to record the extract from the book, and the author kindly said yes. And so if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. So I'm going to read from chapter 5, which is called Bob Lazar's Sport Model. And this is what G.O. Turner has written. While at the base, Lazar observed a variety of spacecraft, 9 in total, some of which he coined terms for, like jello mold or straw hat. According to Bob, all 9 craft functioned under the same form of technology. However, the only vehicle Bob was permitted to examine directly, he nicknamed the Sport Model. In order to preserve secrecy and not allow any one person to know everything, work was compartmentalized into 3 projects. The base commanders paired up various experts, with each group focused only on their aspect of the vehicle. Project Galileo dealt with gravity propulsion and was Bob's selection. Project Sidekick examined a beam weapon focused by a gravity lens. Project Looking Glass was assigned to work out the physics relating to seeing backward in time. This next section is titled Overall Appearance and Layout. This is your classic flying saucer, measuring nearly 53 feet wide and 16 feet tall. Bob describes the exterior as brushed metal, forming a dull aluminium pewter-like finish. It is unclear what substance the ship's creators crafted it from, or whether it's pure metal, an alloy, or, most likely, a metamaterial. Both the exterior and interior are colourless, exhibiting no seams, rivets, or bolts of any sort. Apparently devoid of right angles, the entire vessel seems to be formed from a mould or 3D printed. Bob said, "It was beyond being rounded. It was like it was almost melted. It looked like it's made of wax and heated for a time and then cooled off. Everything has a soft, round edge to it. There's no abrupt change in anything. It looked like everything was cast out of one piece." The author continued, "The 3 levels of the interior are divided into a lower deck, a main deck, and an upper deck, which is speculated to be a computer navigation array. Because of Bob's compartmentalization to gravity propulsion, it is believed that the upper section did not pertain to Bob's team, and thus was kept closed to them. The main deck serves as the hub of the vessel, containing the reactor, amplifiers, and seats. It is important to note that the design of these features was not optimized for adult human use. When Bob could go inside, he found he could only stand upright in the center of the craft. The consoles and seats were too small and low to the floor. It was as if they were made for small children. Surrounding the hull's interior was a series of arches. When the craft was activated for Bob, one arch became transparent, providing a view of the exterior as if it were a window. The main deck's floor had a hexagonal pattern and contained a collapsible, honeycomb-structured latch to the lower deck. When closed, it provided firm enough footing to support people crossing it. However, with a finger insertion and a slight tug, it would retract and fold upon itself easily. Bob described it as similar to cardboard beer bottle partitions. He also joked that of everything he witnessed, only that did he fully understand." The next section is titled Engine Structure. Centered on the main deck is the power plant, contained within a basketball-sized hemisphere. This acts not only as a gravity wave generator, but also as an antimatter reactor. Connected atop is a thin, transparent antenna waveguide that extends through the top of the vessel. Equilaterally positioned from the deck center are 3 gravity amplifiers. These are routed through to the lower deck and to the gravity emitters directly below each. So, how does it work? Essentially, the Sport Model operates similarly to an Alcubierre drive. This is a warp drive concept, contracting space in front and expanding space behind it. Proposed by theoretical physicist Miguel Alcubierre in 1994, the drive offers a workaround to Einstein's field equations, which states objects cannot accelerate to the speed of light. Instead, the Alcubierre drive warps the fabric of space-time around an object. This expansion, contraction, essentially shortens the local distance, allowing the object to arrive at its destination more quickly than light would, while breaking no physical laws. To achieve this, Alcubierre's concept requires a theoretical exotic matter that could produce negative energy density, or anti-gravity. In our case, the Sport model's fuel source, element 115, fulfills this role. However, rather than providing anti-gravity, this element produces gravity. Its A-wave generation can be phase-shifted with the Earth's B-waves, allowing for both push and pull capabilities. As Bob said, the amplifiers always run at 100%. They are always outputting a maximum gravity wave, and that wave is phase-shifted from 0 to 180 degrees. That's essentially the attraction and repulsion, and it's normally at a null setting somewhere in between. It's a very straightforward system. It looks more like a coal-fired engine than very high-tech. The author continues, gravity waves are ripples in the fabric of space-time. These waves can have a wide range of frequencies, depending on the characteristics of the objects that are creating them and the strength of their gravitational interaction. They can become noticeable when two massive objects are in proximity to each other and interact through their pull. An example of this was detected with LIGO, that's the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory, when two black holes collided and merged. According to Bob's understanding, there are two types of gravity. Einstein's general relativity, where gravity results from large sums of mass, gravity B, and a quantum level form, gravity A. The latter version is what we know as the strong nuclear force. The standard model sees the strong nuclear force as a fundamental interaction that confines quarks into forming protons, neutrons, and other hadron particles. It also binds neutrons and protons to create atomic nuclei. It is a force that historically has been accepted as only existing on an atomic scale. Bob has been led to understand that the strong force can extend itself outwardly from within the heaviest elements. This is the gravity A wave. It generates as a continuous signal at a fundamental microwave frequency. That creates a wavelength extension of roughly an inch from the nucleus, where it becomes accessible. While an inch doesn't sound like it would be much of a practical use, for something originating on an atomic scale, it is a vast reach. Imagine an atom enlarged to the size of a basketball. At that scale, our original inch would now stretch well past the size of our solar system, all the way to the surrounding Oort cloud. And that's just comparing to a single atom. That atom's nucleus would be a floating speck inside the ball, 1/1000th the size of its outer skin. On to the next section. This is titled Gravity Emitters. Non-hinged rods act as gimbals, connecting the main deck's three amplifiers above to the lower deck's three emitters. These are directable up to 90 degree angle from vertical and a full 360 degree horizontal swivel. When the craft is manoeuvring within a planet's atmosphere, the emitters take on an Omicron configuration. Two emitters direct their A waves down to negate the B wave of the planet. That weightlessness allows for the remaining emitter to push or pull the ship in any other direction. Possibly because of this off-center alignment, the craft's performance at low speed often presents with a wobble. Before initially lifting off the ground, the disc's underbelly briefly gives off a blue glow and a coronal discharge, a sound similar to that of high-voltage electricity. Once airborne, it is completely silent and the glow fades away. For travelling vast distances, the emitters take on the delta configuration. The craft orients its belly in the intended direction, and all three emitters focus on a single distant point beneath, relative to the craft. The Amplitude is brought to full power, and the sport model warps belly first to its destination. It's like creating a bottomless black hole, but with an on-off switch. Also, consider the shape of the lower half of the craft. Bob believes that nothing on this vehicle was there without a reason. It seemed the beveled rings beneath acted as a gravity lens for the A-wave being emitted. The hull is likely an advanced metamaterial, one capable of focusing gravity waves as well as storing power and redistributing the energy where needed. Essentially, the drive creates a pocket of space-time independent of its surroundings. Occupants become weightless. As we distort space to greater degrees, time compresses for them as well. Taking this into account, it thoroughly explains the ability of the craft to move at enormous speeds without signature sonic booms or exhaust trails. It also eliminates the harmful effects of inertia upon the craft and those within. The sport model would be capable of instantaneous acceleration or deceleration, and could easily appear to make turns at right angles. As Bob says, imagining that you're in a spacecraft that can exert a tremendous gravitational field by itself, you could sit in a particular place, turn on the gravity generator, and actually warp space and time and fold it. By shutting that off, you'd click back and you'd be at a tremendous distance from where you were, but time wouldn't even have moved because you've essentially shut it off. Okay, so this week I was reading from G.O. Turner's book, UFO Science, Secret New Physics, Vehicles and UAP. If you want to buy the book, there is info and a link in the show notes. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon. On the Alien UFO Podcast Patreon, when you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. Just go to patreon.com/AlienUFO Podcast. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.